Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. Thank you guys, as always, for tuning into the Ivy Podcast. I am your host for today's session, Angela Alberti. Very excited to be here with you guys. I want to thank you guys for taking a little bit of your time. Time is one of the more valuable things that we can all offer each other. So thanks so much for spending a few moments of your time with us. You know, we've really had a chance to gain some traction across many different platforms. So wherever you're listening in from the 40 or some odd countries that have plugged in to tune into the Ivy Podcast, we thank you guys. And I am so excited about today's episode. As with many of my podcast episodes, we're really going to be talking about innovation and how talent lends to a company's ethos through that process. So if you are in the talent space, or even the technical innovative front, this episode is certainly one that you want to tune into. I have the opportunity and honor to interview Tom McDonald. Tom, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you for having me on today. I'm excited about this conversation. I'm Tom McDonald. I'm with Sherlock Resources. We are a small boutique recruiting firm based in Houston, Texas. And we focus on engineering, scientific, and technical disciplines. And it was started by my partner, Sue Orr, in 2013.
Awesome. So both some Houston residents on this podcast, we're actually not too far from each other, but not very many opportunities that come around that I have the chance to interview somebody that's in the same city. So yay for Houston on this. Tell us a little bit about your career timeline. I always love asking professionals within this talent space because staffing and recruiting is one of those industries that you don't grow up saying, I'm going to be an astronaut, I'm going to be a doctor, I'm going to be in staffing and recruiting. It's always one that finds you. So where did you lead up to this point? And what are some of those differentiators that Sherlock Resources offers?
Well, my background is kind of an eclectic mix of large company and small company. I've worked for very large companies like AT&T and some others. I've also done startups. And worked for small companies and everything in between. I've increasingly become more and more entrepreneurial as my career unfolded. I would say that my career includes about 15 plus years of work in what I'll call the human capital space, which includes recruiting and some other things that you would include in that as well. Currently, I joined Sue back in, about 2.5 years ago. Again, Sue started Sherlock Resources in 2013 as an engineering and technical recruiting firm. And I joined her to predominantly lead up our business development, community outreach, and of course, our thought leadership program, which is centered on innovation and talent. And that's the topic of the book that I wrote. And that's kind of what we're talking about here today. So
that's awesome. So let's touch on that a little bit. You know, with the growth of the future of work and how much we see that, you know, being inundated into our everyday lives, particularly people like us who are in the human capital space, you have to wonder what evolvement is going to play the part within the staffing and recruiting industry that's going to equate to survivability. So what are your thoughts on the years ahead on how staffing and recruiting firms are going to have to evolve in consideration of this disruptive market as driven by technology? What are your thoughts around that?
Well, I can certainly provide my view. I always enjoy hearing other people's views too. But in my view, I think the recruiting and staffing industry needs to move along the continuum of being less transactional and more consultative, more value added to the client. What we do at Sherlock Resources is we look to be strategic partners with our clients, and we want to help them grow. And we provide specifically, we play a role in the workforce strategies and helping them to execute on their workforce strategies. We view it more as a partnership and more as a shared goal with our client, more so than a transactional view, which says, we have a job opening. Can you send us some resumes? Can you fill this order? We tend not to work like that or think like that or operate like that.
Okay. And that's really interesting to hear, because a lot of the time, you know, when we're on these calls, I think staffing and recruiting has somewhat garnered this notoriety. And I was actually on the call the other day, and it really comes down to evolving with the mantra of the future of work. To me, in my eyes, that mantra, and at its essence and core, ends and begins with the worker. So it's almost this decommoditization, if you will, of human capital, and really going back to that element of being that trusted partner, that consultative approach. Now, when it comes to some of the strategies that you inline, because at the end of the day, a lot of what you guys do is beyond staffing and recruiting. It's, as you mentioned, consultative. What are some of those strategies to help, you know, your clients build and foster this culture of innovation through exceptional candidate and the exceptional candidate experience?
Well, I would say one of the key cultural one of the key aspects of a culture that is innovative is one that fosters collaboration, and that's one of the core topics in my book. And I'm just going to hold it up here for a second. It's called Paving the Way: Innovation, Talent, and the Path Forward. And it's only 80 pages, which includes a few cartoons, so it's a short read. Mm-hmm. It's not meant to be a how-to. It doesn't do a deep dive on any particular topic, but it's a thought-provoking quick read. But there are some leading-edge ideas in there. But back to culture, the culture of innovation is very closely aligned with collaboration. And the case study that I include in this book is one where there's a lot of research behind the neighborhood concept, and I would encourage you to pick up a copy of my book and read more about this. But the neighborhood concept, whereby in this particular case study, the collaboration is created by reframing the idea of managing a project, and this is in large-scale industrial and commercial construction, reframing the problem to zoom out a little bit and view a new management science, which focuses not only on managing an individual project, but now managing multiple projects over time with many players, and looking at the ecosystem and building a new business model that includes a broader ecosystem, and the importance of how do firms collaborate across firm boundaries and improve performance over time, and how do they share risks and dynamically change the risk sharing over time. Those are the kinds of things that can transform an industry. And, you know, there's more of that in my book, if that sounds interesting, but the culture then becomes a part of that whole process. I hope I'm answering.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, here's something that is just top of mind, because a lot of what you're saying really resonates with, you know, many companies who are choosing to evolve into this culture of innovation through leadership and autonomy and purposeful driven work. We have a generation that, you know, is the newer generation now. And before we had a chance to record today's session, I had a wonderful sit down with you, and we talked about this over lunch, but how the millennial and Gen Z impact is going to really evolve into something that values skill set and purposeful driven work over traditional concepts that, you know, were once the make or breaks, like the benefits and the PTO policies. So there's this clarity. But when it comes to where we at now and how a lot of this was pushed forward due to the pandemic, there's a couple of things that are very clear. We're going to be living in a globalized workforce environment. And through that, it's all powered by technology in a remote work setting. So what are your thoughts about remote work in general, and how that essence of collaboration can still be maintained?
Well, that's an interesting question. There's a little bit of humor involved for me. It's I think the pandemic has caused a lot of people to catch up with where I was back in 2002.
Right. So you've been doing it for a while.
I experienced very heavy duty remote work back in the early 2000s when I worked for a global company and we were setting up operations in India. And so I was an integral part of a team that deployed functionality into multiple locations. Actually, it was India, it was Canada, it was the Philippines, it was other places too. And so I experienced a very heavy dose of that back then. And that was before a lot of the technology that's out now was out there, but we did have some technology, you know, we had enough and it certainly worked and we were very successful with that. And so it's kind of humorous to me when I see now the rest of the world is realizing what I've known for decades. And it's not just me. I mean, many people have been in these situations where they've been collaborating across huge geographies for, you know, decades now. So many people already knew this. But I think there were a lot of business environments that hadn't realized that or hadn't experienced it. And so I think it drove a lot of situations that weren't there before. And so I think it's all very positive.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying COVID is positive. I'm saying one of the outcomes of people learning how to work remotely is positive for sure. What disregarding the cause of that.
Right. No, of course. And I think, you know, one of the bigger question marks behind this is how to still maintain that essence of collaboration through such a remote work setting, especially when we have a workforce that's really taking preference into, you know, almost adamant in requiring remote work or some sort of hybrid notion. So, you know, that's the big question mark on how employers are going to need to evolve to tap in and satisfy the workforce, but also maintain that level of collaboration, which, you know, was once attained through peer-to-peer, close in proximity working relationships. And I'm glad that you had a chance to earlier on mentioned a little bit about your book. I did have a chance to read through it. Actually, it was, you know, sitting with me here for the last couple of weeks. And I thought it was pretty interesting on how you talk about some of the traditional project management practices and how these models are being completely reinvented through new wave movements like OS2. So can you walk us through a little bit of that? And, you know, maybe for the listeners out there that aren't project management professionals and experts like myself included, give us the fundamental breakdown of really what that is.
I'll try to encapsulate that here in a few minutes. We did a panel discussion that I put together back in April for the Project Management Institute for both the Atlanta and the Houston chapters, and that went over very well. But in a nutshell, OS2 that you referred to is the initiative primarily led out of the University of Texas at Austin, but other places as well. There's the Construction Users Roundtable, the Construction Industry Institute, and a private commercialization arm called Prairie Dog. And there's a consortium of tens of companies that have invested in this research and practice, deploying a multifaceted approach to completely reimagining the business model for large scale construction, meaning infrastructure type thing. So it could be bridges or dams or roads, but it could be the construction of a refinery or a chemical plant, very large, multi-million, even billion or multi-billion dollar type projects where you have, you know, potentially over 1,000 players in the supply chain, you know, executing on these projects. And, what management science approaches are used to get work of that complexity done. And so this OS2 movement is a combination of technology and behavioral support mechanisms that will transform that industry to the tune of taking the construction of a large chemical plant and constructing that, executing that project with up to 35% less costs and half the time. So we're talking about societal impacting change, very high impact innovation, which is why I chose that example for the little mini case study in my book, because it's an enormous impact and it's very innovative in terms of the approach and the way that it triangulates not only the technology components, but also the behavioral side of that as well. and new approaches to collaboration and risk sharing, which I mentioned before. And so when you put all that together, huge impact. I would encourage anybody to take a look at that in my book, and feel free to reach out if you want to have that conversation further. But that's innovation with a very large impact and a very positive impact. If you think about building infrastructure at that higher level of efficiency and the impact that can have, not only here in the United States where we have kind of a crumbling infrastructure, but also in emerging countries where there's a very high need to build infrastructure. And so very high impact on humanity, society, finances, everything.
Interesting. So, you know, going back to your book, I'd love to get your feedback on personally, what was that experience like for you? What was the prompt behind this? And talk to us a little bit more about how that experience actually helped you into creating this book and writing it.
Well, the impetus for the book is simply as a part of our thought leadership program. Prior to things shutting down, we regularly had live events, thought leadership events, whether they be panel discussions or sponsored dinners with a speaker, or even just something simple like a happy hour. And then when we got locked down, I did some things online and then also decided to write this book. Now, the process of writing it was an adventure in itself. It was not a book where I just sat in my office and wrote things based on reading other things. Now, I did do my homework. I read at least 50 books on innovation, some of which are listed in the further reading section of my book. And there are others that I didn't even list there. So I certainly did my homework. But the book really came out of meeting people and talking to people that are involved in this innovation. And so I had well over 100 Zoom calls where I met people, introduced myself, and said, here's what I'm doing. And then that included some people who ultimately became contributors in my book who are listed in my book. But then there were many, many others that, in the scope of narrowing my book down to a quick read, which was my goal, you know, I couldn't include everything and everybody, but I met a ton of people, fascinating people, incredible people. Innovation is alive and well, trust me. Right. I've seen it. And so that was the process. It really came out of my conversations with people more so than textbook type research.
Interesting. So, you know, as we are ultimately wrapping up today's session, Tom, I'd love for our audience to kind of pick your brain a little bit on this. What is your content diet? What are some of the things that you wake up to and read and digest and internally and intellectually form you into the person you are today? What are some of those, you know, tidbits that you're looking into every day?
Oh, I mean, you probably don't even want to know. this morning I was up at 5 o'clock reading information theory.
Oh, wow.
which is, that's a whole field in and of itself that underpins new approaches in the hard sciences like physics, as well as very, very significantly challenges the underpinnings of the social sciences, particularly economics. And just provides a different window into how to view different things. It's, you know, information theory. So that's what I was reading at 5 o'clock this morning. But I read all kinds of stuff. I talk to people. I read books, articles, blogs. I listen to podcasts. I soak in a lot of information. And I also work very hard within Sherlock Resources too. So it's I typically have full days. So
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's funny that I've spoken to so many people through the wonderful opportunities we've been giving on this platform. And the consistency has always been that, you know, a lot of the content diet is garnered through those everyday conversations that they have with people that, you know, are within this certain particular niche that they feel passionate about, like yourself, and what it's done to lend itself into this book, through these interviews and through these basic questions and conversations that you've been having with people. So, it's really interesting to hear you say that as well. Now, what is a way that our audience can get a hold of you? If we want to find Tom McDonald, what is the easiest way for us to do that?
The quickest way is to go on LinkedIn and find my profile and send me an invitation and connect, and then Awesome. Send me a note.
Awesome.
And I believe my email address is on my LinkedIn profile, I think. But I mean, certainly connect with me on LinkedIn. And
Right.
I'd be happy to connect.
Great. Well, any closing remarks as we wrap up today's session, Tom?
No, just thank you for having me on. I like having the opportunity to share my enthusiasm for innovation and how it ties to talent specifically. And maybe some other time we can get more into, how talent will impact new ways of doing business in the future. That's a whole other animal.
Absolutely.
But these are things that I'm passionate about. And it ties directly into what we do here at Sherlock Resources and how we operate. We want to help businesses grow and succeed through talent and through innovation and through working with our clients and being creative and helping them, with the challenges that they have and helping them succeed.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Tom, for sitting down with us today and allowing us a chance to ask you a few questions. Thank you to our listeners as well for tuning in. That wraps up today's session. We will catch you guys on the next Ivy Podcast episode. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.